When moving forward seems too much, when you feel totally out of touch, out the door, you find yourself curled on the floor. The thoughts swirl around all jumbled and why is this brain so darkly obsessed? I've secrets, I've confessed, haven't told a soul I am pressed. A gentle whisper through the rainbows follow rain. Breathe deep, hold on tight. Your hope will return, shut, embrace the storm. Reach out, let your strength be shown.
Hello there. It is very good to be back with you again today. I'm Elaine Lindsay. This is Suicide Zen Forgiveness. I am also the Dark Pollyanna. I bring to everything I do a lot of chaos and a boatload of compassion. And today, I have a lovely guest. This is Dan Pelly. Hi there.
Hi, Elaine. Thank you for having me on.
Well, thank you very much for coming to see us and offering to share your story, because we firmly believe that by sharing our stories, we lighten our burden and we help our audience to find that hope that can help people go on, because it's critically important for us to have these, what I call conversations, because honestly, that's what we want to do. We would like to save people and reignite their hope. With that said, why don't you tell us a little bit about you, Dan?
Well, I'm Dan Pelly, inspirational speaker, suicide warrior. I've been public since 2016. Had to overcome a lot of shame and guilt to get there.
Yeah.
It's a really tough situation, even for men the most, because women suffer too, but the men have this other edge that's got to be the provider, don't be weak, and how I was raised. But anyway, I got there after, and then we went to that a little bit with some questions of what happened to me in the past. But now I've been public for 9 years. Well, it's all about dialogue, like you said, very important. Love the intro. The intro was very moving, very important, you know, inspiring someone to choose life over suicide. Suicide is very horrific. I always say my motto that I've come up with, that when the people talk about cowardly and they talk about weak and all that, I was one of the strongest guys, raised Italian. I didn't suffer till late in life. I never suffered depression, suicide ideation. So I was brought up to be tough. I used to open baby traps until things fall apart. And then you realize it doesn't matter how strong you are, how big you are. It really didn't matter. So I got to the point where, you know, knowing that this was going, you know, starting to occur in my life, I realized that, and as I've been doing this for 9 years, I said, you know, suicide is not a selfish act. It's actually a suffering act. And whether you're suffering within minutes from getting some shocking news, or within days of suicide ideation, or within hours or seconds, you know, these are the people that are the most difficult to help. The ones that might walk into a home and the wife has moved up and all the kids, whatever tragedy or someone needs to try it, and their mind snaps and they just do it. And that's a suffering act too, because it's happening within seconds and minutes of their life, or it took me 8 months to get there of suicide ideation because I was fighting and fighting not to do it.
I'm going to stop you there for a second because that's really, really important what you said. And I want to be sure that I remind people this is Men's Mental Health Month.
It is.
And basically all of our shows this month are men, because you're absolutely right. Easier is not the word I want to use, but more women are more likely to tell someone they are feeling suicidal. They are more likely to talk about it. and to talk about a possible attempt than men. And you are absolutely right. It is cultural. It is male. It is the way we were brought up. Men were strong. They were stoic. They were steadfast. They didn't show emotion. You didn't have emotion. They were supposed to be the rock that we all rotated around. The family man was the person who brought home the bacon, who looked after everyone in the family. He was that solid anchor that you had at the middle of a family.
Exactly.
And that's not true. It's so not true. Okay? Every single human has feelings. Animals feel. Even science has come to the conclusion plants have feelings. Okay? It's the way it is. We're all made of energy. I believe we all feel. I believe we all need to learn how to deal with our emotions. Because the funny thing is, it's not something we're taught. We're not taught about emotions. We're not taught about feeling. We're not taught that most emotions last from 10 to 90 seconds. That's it. And sometimes knowing that it's going to move on will give you a chance. But suicide, I believe, is a very final answer to a temporary problem.
That's a very big statement, and it's been said many times.
Yeah, exactly. We're talking
about these feelings, but it triggers me in a way, not in a bad way, but it reminds me of the moments that my father was very strong. I mean, there's a good side to that. I think men have a role, women have certain roles. I love women, but now I'm working because the government, you have to have a two-income household to survive.
Yeah.
And I don't envy women that do pregnancies. It's woof. It's like, I'm glad you guys are doing that job. You know, and it's a wonderful thing. And it's just, I love the equality in that part of it because my mother was always subservient and things that affected my relationships and I've learned and things like that. But never will my father... When I was getting emotional, like I was sad or something was happening, and I needed to get some confirmation from him that, yeah, things are tough right now, son, but I'm still proud of you. You know, it's something I cried about for many years that he never actually said, I love you, to my face. And then really put it out there. He raised 11 kids. So I followed the great guy.
Wow.
I got half brothers, half sisters, and he took care of communities. He was a philanthropist group. Charitable work he instilled in me young. All the wonderful memories after you get over the anger, there's a good side to every parent, even the worst ones.
Yeah.
So there's things going on. We have to respect that they gave us life, no matter if we like them or not. You got to respect they gave you life. But I wanted to say about when I saw the AT&T commercial years back, where the guy gets on the AT&T commercial and he puts his arm around his son and he pulls him close and he goes, I love you, son.
Yeah.
I started crying refusiously because I've always yearned for that. So now I'm taking our relationships, some of them the wrong ones, maybe they were good for long periods, say 12, 16 years. I was seeking out the imago image of my father to try to get the affection and love that I wanted from him. And instead I'm going with women, a little bit on the cold, unaffectioned side. It's not my fault. Your mind will image and all these things. And I've learned a lot about it. And as you said, you got to be very careful about your partnerships, no matter who you're with, whoever your partner is, that you're not trying to heal something through them.
No.
And that was a big lesson for me. So when people say, you've been married three times, you're a three-time loser, I said, no. I'm a three-time winner because I learned a lot about relationships. The first most childhood sweetheart, I don't count. It's still 14. Second one was a good 12, 14 years again. My last one was 18 years. So I've been around that relationship. And then I said, it's time to find Dan after my divorce in 16 and really raise my life condition. And really challenge myself to do videos and be alone for a bit, have that standalone spirit. I'm not that old day that I have fun. It's just that I'm concentrating on my real estate business to end that eventually. The book totally hit the speaking for my third chapter of my life. And making these videos, it really stayed in rhythm the past 9 years, getting better and better at it, to really be due diligent when I'm talking on my videos about how to stay determined to choose life and don't give up, because I'm lucky I'm still here.
Yeah.
After my two attempts, I am lucky that I'm still alive. And I'll speak about one way back in the 80s when I was driving tractor trailer. I almost got killed. You were talking about a car accident with me off tape. I was driving tractor trailer for 7 years in my 20s. And I wasn't suicidal or nothing, but I fell asleep at the wheel after sleeping 5 hours. I hit a bridge abutment at 70 miles an hour. And if you saw the picture, it looks like a tomato can split open. They could, the sleeper was crushed. It was a flat. Well, there's no scratch, it was a flat. Calling a big load for TJ Maxx clothes at the time from Boston to Cincinnati. Tough, doing my thing. I was divorced. I was like, yeah, I was happy. And I was doing what I had to do. And I should have been dead. And if I got killed in that accident, which I wasn't suicidal at all. I wasn't even thinking about depression. I was a very happy guy. You know, being too run to weep, pushing a little harder than I wanted to. And that's probably a plus me going back to sleep after I sleep. 3 o'clock in the morning, huge highways in Ohio. Fucked her the impact a mile away. Of course, they were at the donut shop. And they turned it at 3 a.m. And it kind of tells me the story because they both brought me, they got me the ambulance in the hospital. And they both brought me, they took up through the truck accident because they got the call after they heard the impact. They could hear it. We thought it was a bomb.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I didn't turn the wheel at the last second, they say I ripped up 100 yards of guardrail. I was working out a lot, lifting. I was doing security at Joe's at Conscience. And well, had a buddy, you know. He said, come on, let's do security. Back then, we were just doing it. I was very strong, and I turned that wheel as hard as I could, and I hit impact. They found me 20 feet up the road, holding my head, turning in a circle on the breakdown lane like I got thrown down like Superman. If people saw this truck, I showed people the truck, they're like, you're definitely going to cluster your blessings in your life, because how'd you survive that? The cop couldn't believe it. When he came up to the truck, he goes, I don't see the guy in here. Said there was about 3 or 4 feet left in my driver's side. The engine was on the ground. The thing was totally split. They crushed. And the cop said to his buddy on the ground, I don't see any blood in the sleeper. What's going on? I don't know where this guy is. I don't see any blood around. He goes, shine the spotlight up the road.
Yeah.
Instead of he shoots it up the road, he looked at his partner. He goes, I can't believe this guy's still alive. 50 stitches on my head, 5 broken ribs. I get out easy.
Yeah.
I should have been dead 5 days, along, 6 days, 7 days of hospital to get the ribs back, to breathe again.
Yeah.
The best part of the story, I never drove truck again, that's for sure, because I see a truck coming after they put me in a wheelchair to the airport, and I was like, most traumatic.
Yeah.
I get on the plane, guy just sees me, he says, what the hell happened to you? I'm in the wheelchair all wrapped up and bandaged up, you know, got to come back to Boston. He goes, told him I had to drop that truck accident. He goes, here, take my seat. He gives me his first class seat.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, wow, what a nice guy. He goes back to my third class seat. I sit down, there's a plug looking out the window. I'm like, well, maybe I'll get a date out of this. So I'm laughing. She turns around. It's Barbara Eden from I Dream of Jeannie.
Wow.
She's like early 40s. I'm like late 20s. She turned around. I went, Barbara. I couldn't believe it. That was like, it's beautiful. I just sitting there looking at her.
What a gift.
Like me, like the other man. We all had a brush on this. She started laughing. I go, where's your bottle? I need to make a wish. She goes, oh, I'm sorry, it's in Cairo. And she's asking me what's going on. We had the conversation all the way back to Boston. My brother couldn't believe I met her. He was like, I don't believe you. I got him on the phone. I had a girlfriend at the time. And I said, so tell Pauline and you. I said, I'm telling you, I met her. I don't think he's coming out. No, I don't believe him. I get to see him and my girlfriend at the time. And she comes walking out way over in the dirty hill over there. I'm like, hey, Barbara. Talking like she's my best friend.
Yeah.
Barbara, she comes over with a couple of people. She's got a little entourage. Hi, Dan. Good to see you. So you on the plane. We talked. My brother, his mouth was like this. He couldn't believe it. Well, anyway, that was my story. And I didn't know, I found this out 6-7 years ago. Her only son died from a drug overdose. He might have been suicide. It was a bad situation. And it was the only son. I was so sad to read it while I read it.
Yeah.
Because I met her. I mean, it was just such a... But that was the end of my truck driving career, and I've been in real estate since.
I think that's a very good transition. Absolutely.
So ask me, shoot away. What's interesting?
It's interesting to me that you're definitely younger than me. But our...
I don't know about that.
Our generation, and even my daughter is 51 with you this year. And even like us as her parents, the men in our lives were all taught the same thing. And it's not that your dad or my dad or anyone else's dad wasn't a good dad, because under the rules, if you will, that they had for being a dad, my dad fulfilled all of them. And your dad had 11 kids. Like, that's a whole... That's more than a baseball team, right?
Whole different world.
It must be. There were two of us, myself and my sister. Mm-hmm. But my father brought my mom and I and my grandmother and my aunt to Canada. Mm-hmm. And they used all the money they had to bring my grandmother and my aunt with them. So we didn't get to bring our furniture or anything like that. But money didn't matter. Family's what mattered. And all the...
Exactly. My dad was the same way.
Exactly. And all the...
And back in the day, all the people of the older days, money wasn't such a hot button all the time. Yeah, you'd want it. But doing hard work, getting out, doing social, being part of life was more important. Today, it's all...
We were really poor when I was little, but... We didn't really know it.
I was semi-poor.
My parents made sure that we were provided for, and that was great. But the difference between how a man should act and how a woman should act, it was basically set in stone. And if a man deviated from that or showed feelings, people would look at him weird. Like it just was not the norm. And I firmly believe when we know better, we do better. And in the last 20 years, I just lost my dad in March. He was 92. Thank you.
20 years ago, actually, 04, my dad.
We knew that he loved us.
Me too. I knew he loved me inside.
Yeah. I knew I could turn around.
I just wanted to shake him and tell him.
It because it wasn't the done thing, but there were a lot of things you didn't talk about.
Yep.
Okay. If someone had a mental issue in your family, you weren't allowed to talk about that. If perhaps somebody lost their job or got fired or what have you.
Right.
You weren't allowed to talk about that. One of my girlfriends in high school, they had come to sleep over, three of my friends. And the next morning, my mother made my father at the table. She said, look, you have to talk to these girls. My father was very shy, quiet. And so he turned to the girl beside him and he said, so what does your dad do? And she said, I don't know. He said, what do you mean you don't know what your own dad does? And I went to a parochial school. I'm Catholic. Okay. These were all girls from our school. And she said, my parents are divorced. I don't know a lot about my... That was it. My poor father was mortified that he'd upset us. But one of the other girls, the next time he tried to talk to her, which was about a month later, she couldn't tell him what her mother did because her mother was in an asylum. And I can remember after that, when my friends went home, my father said to my mother, I will read my newspaper, and that's all I will do when there are other kids here. Because he didn't know how to react. This had never happened. And it was all things you didn't talk about.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the whole dialogue thing wasn't there.
Oh, my God, no. And
especially
now,
any kind of feelings.
Yeah. And now we're making a point of telling our young people and the men in our lives, okay, I want to know how you feel because it matters.
I am. How you feeling? You okay?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
More than just the surface.
Absolutely.
You know, I want to know where, not your job. I don't know all that.
No.
I know about. I want to know about how your heart's feeling, how things feel.
Exactly.
How's your mind? How's your heart?
Yeah.
So I, you know, I look at this when you're talking that, it kind of brings up thought. Obviously, we're having this, like you said, conversation.
Yeah.
A lot. And, you know, I have a biological son. I have a stepson. I have grandkids. So
nice.
What I done with my stepsons, I raised them since they were 7, 5, and 2. Very young, I took on another family after my first attempt. In 1996, by 2000, I met another girl. And she had 3 kids, and she was shocked that I even took on 3 kids.
Wow.
And I told them, I'm ready for another family. They took to me, and I raised them, and everything was great to a point. And then my stepdaughter almost got killed in a car accident at 07. She was 16.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And she suffers with a TBI, and she inspires me because of her strength and who she is, and to see her and talk with her. Yeah, she didn't go to Harvard. Like, she was going to get a scholarship to Harvard. He's a very smart kid. The brothers used to get upset with her because she never studied, and she was getting A's and B's.
Yeah.
She would just look things over before she knew. So she was very smart. Even when you suffer about things like that, you know, they're going to miss.
Yeah.
But that triggered my second attempt after we got back on the team in 2010, 14 years later. But anyway, raising them, we're going to tell them even more, but raising these kids, early on, I hugged Joey. I love you. I love you, DJ. I love you. And they get all nervous because they want to be tough little guys. And especially when they got to be teenagers, and then through one of the Marines, my biological son's older. But when you start hugging them when they're older, and they're not ready for it yet, they're almost like, I know you hugged me when I was little, but no, don't do that.
Don't do that. Like,
I grab Joe, I grab him because he pulled away a little bit. Come here, I love you.
This is important.
I'm really diligent. I look him right in the face, and I tell him, I love you. You need reaffirmation because I'm Italian, so like, I got an attitude sometimes. I told him, but it's a good one. I said, you're not pulling away. I want to hug you and tell you I love you. Okay, it's all. You'll be told I love you till my last breath.
Yeah.
Because I missed out on that, and it gives you some strength and reaffirmation that you love. So it's something that men have to get used to doing, because they say, it's weak, or like what I said about weak, like we said, but on suicide, did come up with this motto that suicide to me is not a selfish act. It's a suffering act. And I use this motto a lot, and I feel it, because when I think back of my times in 96, to talk a little bit about what happened to me, not to trigger anybody, I don't get into the fine details, whether it's like pills, guns, or hanging, I don't want to get into this way, that, and the pills I took, it happened. And me, for like women, pills seems to be the more gentle way for women, so they might attempt more than men, I reckon. It's not more than men, and they're less successful because the meds don't work, whatever pills they're taking. The men are much more successful because of the hanging or the guns. It's much more permanent. So I don't want to do it that way. But anyway, when it came to my suicide ideation, the divorce, loss of funds, close the real estate office. I don't recommend doing 3 major things in one.
Oh, no.
All of this happened. My brother said, you got to close it if you can't run it. I couldn't get out of my own way. I started getting depressed for the first time at 39 years old. I'm like, I told my brother, I can't get out of my own way. I got 12 people working here. I can't even run myself, never mind run them.
Oh.
He's like, you need to close. Come with me. You can live in Florida. Strength, support. Lucky I had him. Blessed. Although I had to change my profession from a 3-piece suit to the working truck driver into a suit. And do a real estate for many years and business type of thing. And now I have to go with my brother in detail cars and get humble. Mm-hmm. So he had a great detail shop. I'm not saying it's any different from a 3-piece suit, great business, but it was a big transition for me to go back into hard labor. So I get into his shop. I don't want to talk to people. He put me in the garage. I said, don't make me get on the talk. You can see. I didn't want to even look at anybody. Never mind talk to anybody. So I said, don't let me approach customers. I don't want to deal with setting people up. Just keep me in the shop for a while. And I'm just cleaning, throw up out of back seats, and I'm getting more depressed. And it's not his fault. And it's getting worse. And the three major things, I drive my car, I threw my accordion away that I used to play as a young man. Everything in the bathwater when you want to be done.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't want to bring that. Just pack my clothes and I drove.
Yeah.
Now I'm in 96 down there and we're talking. I don't know. That's got to be getting up there. I keep adding up the years. Bull Orange. It's 29 years ago.
Yeah.
So I'm in this situation where I'm starting to really get depressed. Now it's getting worse. And this is going on from May of 96 all the way to November. But it's built up into, you know, I was already depressed when I got there. So May, June, July, August, here, 6 months, it starts getting worse and worse through May, June. Now I get quiet. I start getting secretive that I want to do something drastic. I'm not telling my brother. I'm not telling anybody. I just tell him I need help. So back then, 30 years ago, you weren't getting therapy as quick. But I did go talk to a counselor, and he told my brother, you need to watch out for him. You know, things are happening for him and everything. So try to, you know, really compress it because there's so much. But as it went on with the suicide ideation, it got worse and worse. Now I didn't realize I was getting clinically depressed. That's all I thought about was the headache. That's all that kept coming in my mind. Vodka pills, put them in the trunk for 4 months, drive up and down the highway, thinking about it constantly, every day. I don't want to be here no more. I've lost everything, like all this pain and suffering. Now, some people, I say this, would think, okay, you lost everything. A lot of people lose everything, but they don't go down that road. Like, I got a brother that says, I don't think I get down that road, even depressed, and I've been depressed. I said, some people are not made up certain ways.
No.
Might never go down that road. They could lose everything, but something that loss to you could be small, is significant to you, might be insignificant to someone else. So you really can't judge what's bringing them into the suffering. Or they can't pull out of it, or they're not getting the right help or the right manager or the right therapist. So I go on worse and worse as July, August hit. Now I'm thinking about what hotel. Let me find the place. Let me pick something coming out, delivering cars for my daughter after they're done. Detail. Well, I pick a hotel. Finally, November, it's getting worse and worse. I'm on a little Zoloft. It didn't have enough time to kick in at the time in November. You need 8 weeks, you know, to really feel something changing and level you off a little bit. But anyway, I hit October area, and that was it. I was getting more anxious to do it. Like, I don't want to live no more. It's like people don't realize the pain can happen, like I said, in seconds or minutes. But the pain was like an 800-pound gorilla around my back. I talk about it in my videos. And it's like, man, I'm a tough guy. I should be able to handle this. And it's like, I had nothing to do with it. I became weak and frail. I couldn't lift anything. The depression took over so bad that I was a walking mummy. And the day came on November 29th. I called into that hotel. I get in that room. And I'm looking at what I'm going to take. And I'm like, I can't believe I'm going to do this. And I look at the corner of the room and I see it all a little dirty, little corner I'm staring at. And I said, this is it, Dan. This is where you're going to end it. And the shame and the guilt and the note writing. And I don't know if you had suicide ideation, if you had an attempt. We haven't talked about that, but if you had attempts, it survived. And I agonized for 9 hours that night. And I finally made the move. And I said, after writing notes, I'm sorry. It's not because I'm weak. I have so much pain going on in my heart and my head. I can't stop it. It won't stop. It's like a runaway train. And it's not like I want to leave you or my son or all these notes. I got the notes still that the next book I'm going to be involved in, we talked about incorporating, you know, into my own book, these notes.
Yeah, yes.
Show people what you're writing and how your mind is, where, like you said, it's a permanent solution to a temporary problem that you could pull out of this, maybe. Whether it's a quick suicide attempt or it takes months. And I ingested it a lot, and I'm lucky I made it. And I woke up 3 a.m. looking green and purple from the Tylenol stuff, whatever. I don't like to talk about all the ins and outs of it, but I took a massive amount. And I woke up again at 6 a.m. I said, shit, I can't even do this right. And I call my sister-in-law. She's a nurse. Where are you? We're so worried about you. I said, I'm in the hotel. I did something drastic. And I can't even believe I'm still alive. Oh, my God, dear, you got to come get to the house. Did you drive? I don't know how I drove.
Yeah.
I was chemically imbalanced. It was like, I don't know how I drove. And I got there. Nobody was there at the time. She was still working. Like, I'll come as soon as you get there. I go on the couch, I just lay down, and I thought I was going to still die, the chemical, the colonel, whatever was kicking in. And she looked at me, and she's like, let's go.
Yeah.
Got me to the IC unit. Doctor sees me in the waiting room. What's going on there? He says, I see you in the intake, you try to kill yourself. Look, we're trying to save people's lives here. When you try to kill yourself, he goes, what did you do? Told him the massive amount I took. He's like, you did what? He's like, you took that much? So I'm surprised I'm even talking to you. Kids can take a few of those and be gone. He goes, you know, we're going to try to save your life, Dave. He said, but you might have accomplished what you want to accomplish. I'm looking at him going, why? I'm still alive. He goes, the problem is with the Tylenol, I mean, what you did, it takes 24 to 48 hours to affect your organs, your kidney, your liver. Now I'm dying over and over as he's talking to me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Doc, now it all switched when we had the conversation. Like, he's like, well, you might have complicated you on the bottle. So he gave me an IC. They're taking my blood levels every 4 hours. Had the problem with this. I got the general doctor, McCarthy. I got a Dr. Maynard for the liver doctor. I got Dr. Slack, whatever he was. He looked like Lurch for me, like Adam Shaley. He was that tall. He was like 6'8". He's the liver doctor. So I got all these people as a team on me. McCarthy was an old Vietnam vet doc. Really caring, really wanted me to survive and really helping me. And they got me an IC. Now the levels, he goes, the problem with the levels, when they go up and down, they'll do this for me. And so when they go up and stay up there, and then we got problems.
Yeah.
So the first 24 hours, I'm starting to hallucinate from the amount I took.
Oh, this thing
was happening a lot. I thought it was after a night and a half that I did the levels of staying up, and was sorry to report this to you. But your organs are probably going to break down, and you're probably going to die.
Wow.
So I'm dying again and again, and I'm crying, and I'm like, I don't want to die now. And they're like, we're trying to help you. Liver doctor makes me sign, you know, the kidney doctor, they do the dialysis machine. Well, yeah, one at this hospital. Not the first night. We're going to try to do dialysis to clean your kidneys out. They take the machine away at 2 a.m. I see it outside my door. I'm like, what the hell are you doing? I thought you were coming in my room. She comes in the room. You know what she says to me? She goes, unfortunately, then we only have one machine. But anybody that's a drug addict or a suicide attempt person, they come second and third. I'm sorry. There's a gentleman who comes in and needs it. He's not a drug addict or he's not suicide. So now I'm Vic going, I can't even get help. So they finally give me the dialysis machine the next day, all that. And he says, you know, the levels are still up. And then they're staying up. And we got a really serious problem. You should call your parents. You should call your family there. So my brother's like, maybe we should hold off. I said, yeah, I don't want to make them panic, man. I'm going to go. I don't know if they're going to get here in time. My brother was right with me. Yeah. So anyway, the liver doctor comes in after. He goes, Dan, the problem is you took some extra strength with that massive. That's a real problem with your liver. I'm going to call Gainesville and see if I can get you a liver transplant if you go bad. Okay, he comes in the next morning. He goes, I talked to Gainesville.
No.
Liver transplant. I'm like, why? He goes, drug addicts and suicide attempt are not in line for it. I'm signing all these forms. Like I'm signing my life away every time I do dialysis and all that. So now I hit that night. I really sat loose. I thought I died that night. Like you talked about your experience of death.
Yeah. Walk.
I felt like I died that night. Long story short, you know, that part, because it was a horrific 3 days, you know, there's so much going on.
Wow.
And so the third day on a Sunday morning, I wake up after a horrific night. I could have sworn I'd die. And I wake up at like 7 a.m. I think they said, and they were all standing over me. McCarthy, Mater, Block, two head nurses. They're all looking at me in amazement. Miracle. They're like, we can't explain to you, Dan, what happened, but the last two levels we took for you, your levels are normal, but we've never seen anything like it. From the amount you took, your levels are normal. And I'm like, I could have sworn I was dead when I was looking at them. And they're like, you're going to make it. We don't know if you're going to have any complications. But once they stay down like this, they're down.
Yeah.
You're probably going like, oh, it's like, this is just blessing. And I'm like, never again. Don't ever say never again when it comes to depression and suicide. I looked out the window at that third floor hospital in Florida. I'm like, never again. I walked out of there, got therapy. I got on medication. Made sure I was keeping myself safe. Yeah, you don't feel your feelings as much when you're on meds. I recommend them to keep you safe and need them for a long period, and that's the way it is.
Yeah.
I've been med-free since 2012 after my
second. That's good.
And I just felt like I needed to do it. In my Buddhist practice, I do it. I have the Zen and the Buddhist thing, and I'm a practicing Buddhist, and I'm not a Catholic anymore for 17 years. So I chant the mantra, Nam Myoho Renge Kyo. It has raised my life condition, but I was battling a lot of devilish functions in the early old read after Justine's accident in 07. And yet as I was practicing, I was fighting off a lot of negative energy. I still had an attempt. And that, you know, so when I walked out of the hospital, I got better. A year later, I was still on meds, but I said, I'm going to go back to Boston for my son. And I started another life. I said, I'm in my mother's basement for a year. I said, I'm going to go to Bunker Hill Community College in Boston. I never went to college. I'm going to take a psychology course because I need it. So I went in. I took two buses to get there every day. I put my head down and I stayed humble. And I met my second wife there, my third wife, actually. As a childhood one, I never found. I always said I was married twice because it was there, but... Anyway, I met her in Bunker Hill doing the nursing program with the three stepkids in 2099. And that's how I met her. And then I met the three kids. So, you know, everything was good again. I was back on my feet and I didn't feel sad. I was so happy. Met a girl. So I took on a new life, I opened up another real estate office and things took off. Raising the kids, everything was good. We bought a house in 2002, a big house, and everything was great. And then my brother died a month after my dad in 04. He was only 53, so we were back at the same funeral at 9. But my mother, leaving our love of real life and our firstborn, my brother Frankie, was just horrific. So, like, of course, my stepkids lived with them, and they cried with me. And just an 04 tough time. 2 years in the house, boom, we had that happen. More towards me than them. Then, of course, Justine turns 16. She gets in the wrong car, and the kid wraps it around a tree. Get a call at 2 a.m. I never saw a mother suffer like I saw this mother suffering. I mean, the suffering, saving her life, 48 days in IC, had to open her head up, relieve the pressure, took a TBI. Oh, you'd see her now, she's 34, you would never know.
Oh, that's
good. Until you talk to her. So we keep going to Harvard, her short-term memory's not there. But if you ask her what she had 2 hours ago to eat, she can't tell you. And, you know, things like that, but it really rocked us. It rocked our family, the two boys.
Oh, my whole God,
The mother was a captain. I was with her every day. My father showed me how to be there for people and even your loved ones. And every day I was in that ICU unit. She couldn't walk, talk, or move, or eat. Had to learn it all again. And seeing her talk for the first time after 20-something days, I was going in the room and I just seeing them here. She looked at you, she'd acknowledge you were all that. Told her she was a fighter and we're going to see you through this and all that. But they had to put her legs in cast and all that. She took the worst out of the five kids. The other kids had broken ankles, backs, but she took the worst. She almost died. You know, to get her head opened up was the most horrific thing.
Oh my God.
You know, walking through all this. So, plus, I'm being strong. I'm going to be here for this kid, 07, 08. Finally, 6 months of rehab, I didn't see a victory. The mother happened to go home with the two boys. She hasn't talked in 20-something years. I go in the room and she said something. I said, what did you say? And I got close to her mouth and she goes, Mom, I'm like, oh my God, Justine, you're speaking. I said, let me call your mother. So I called Linda. I called the mother. I put the phone, said, Linda, are you sitting down? She goes, why? What's going on? I said, it's good, sit down. I put the phone up to Justine. She went, Mom. She was crying on the other end, victory, blessing. She's Christian. So she's praying and she's like, oh my God. I was peeling her off the floor in the ICU. No one knows this kind of suffering until you go through it. You don't want to go through anything like this. But you really don't know until you're there. You sympathize with people. You have compassion. Like when I do like things about suicide, people see it like, yeah, that's good inspiration. But I'm going to move on to the next thing that entertains me. Because it's not really effective. And it's not their fault. But we need to, like we do in this more awareness thing. Anyway, jump forward. Second attempt comes. I started practicing Buddhism in a way because I was struggling so bad with happening. I come to 6 months of rehab and getting her through the IC and walking again, making sure she could eat again in the swallow test and successfully doing that.
Yeah.
All these little Vicky, the one step forward, three steps back.
Yeah.
It's all that was going wrong for me and the wife at the time. And it's just the worst thing anybody could go through outside of losing her. Losing her would have been the worst. So anyway, we get her out on this, get her home after 8-9 months. She hasn't lived home in rehab 7 months. It was a big, long hallway. At this Kennedy. It was the Franciscan Hospital. It happens to be right across the street from the high school I graduated from.
Oh, wow.
So this got to be karma that I'm here for this kid. It used to be the Kennedy Memorial, and now it's Franciscan. I'm like, I can't believe we're going there because we're coming out of the Midwest of Massachusetts, UMass and Worcester, Mass. People say, what's that? Worcester, Mass. It's the second city in Massachusetts, near to Boston. 6 months there. Anyway, we get him home now. I mean, he's got to be handicapped. The mother, she's she has to wear the pens and stuff because there's a preliminary gland that wasn't functioning right that she would pee. And the doctor said that might correct itself. And we prayed that it did. And it did correct itself.
Oh, good.
And then the rehab, she had a left broken hip at the same time of the accident. They were struggling with, we got to do the hip because she could die from that.
Yeah.
And we got to deal with this swelling of the brain. So we have multiple things going on with them. We're going to do the hip. We got to get this hip done. Imagine her being operated on while she's got the head injury.
Oh, my God.
This is a strong kid. I mean, this is just...
Yeah.
It's a moving, horrific story. Anyway, get her back on if you've got her home. Now it's rehab and showing them. We're not going to say she's... You have differences going on, Justine, but we're going to go out, me and you, and we're going to go to the Mothers Against Drunk Driving for what this kid did, and you're going to come with me. And me and you, she get all nervous because it changes your kind of emotions. We don't want you to do this. We're going to do this, me and you. Your mother don't want to do it, but we're going to do it. So me and her went out, and we met speaking to colleges and showed them what can happen to somebody. And she would speak, don't get in a car, drunk. Don't, I made the big mistake. She would speak up, and I would guide her into the conversation like we're doing. Anyway, I wrote a 32-page suicide prevention program in Bunker Hill when I got my associates and going for my associates. And in 2000, I wrote that about all the statistics of a suicide and everything. 33 pay for group. I don't do anything with it because I start another family. Now it jumps into now 10. She's back on her feet. All of a sudden, 08 comes 09. Yeah, it was 08, 09. I start feeling depression again because now we got her on her feet somewhat. I've accomplished it. And, I get worse and worse. Now I'm taking at it. I'm taking means to go to sleep. I'm not ready. And I'm feeling it come again. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. I've already been here. And it got worse and worse. By the time 09 hit, and I'm still practicing, telling my members, wait, what's going on here? This is the karma you need. You're trying to expedite that karma death. Just because you're practicing doesn't mean it's a magic pill. You keep chanting, keep doing your thing, you'll get there. Okay, so I get worse and worse and that. Now I start staying in bed. I stay in bed for almost a year. I don't want to move at 9 to 10. My wife's trying to pull me out of bed, walk me. I'm hallucinating. I'm just seeing devilish energy. It just was so horrific of what's going on with me. And I was ashamed again. I was shameful again. I was like the shame and the guilt and the. So I take too much of the sleeping. You know, I'll leave one day and I do it and I take too much. They come home and they got to call an ambulance. They're all panicking and I'm not putting this on the flu family. And I'm like, after Justine, I'm just mortified. They pump me, I pump it out. You know, it wasn't as severe as my first attempt, but enough that it could have killed me.
Yeah.
I survived again. They put me on the cyst floor. I'm in there getting watched because of what I did, but you need to be watched when you're in this kind of state. Yeah. I look up at the sign and it says these people on this sign that have suffered with bipolar and depression. I see Winston Churchill.
Yeah.
I see Leo Tolstoy, all these people that I knew of, and I'm like, geez, I'm in good company. Anyway, I knew I had to get better and not do this ever again. And I'm in there for 5-6 days. I'm reading my Buddhist material, doing everything I got to do. I'm struggling. I'm on 2 or 3 meds for all of 10. I'm on 4 to 5 meds. I'm on Bilifen or Miss. I'm on that just to keep me from jumping or doing bad. I mean, I was a little numb. I could tell you, you don't get your feelings, but I'll tell you, it kept me safe.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking like, oh, let's go do this again. Let's do this, and this, and the suicide meets you. So basically, I chanted more and more, started raising my life condition, which started changing. I made a determination that I want to be off of meds by 2011. And that was my chant, all of 11. And I started moving off the meds with my psychiatrist and my therapist. Got down to 2 meds, 3 meds, then 2 meds, then 1 med. By December of 11, I was med 3.
Wow.
And it changed my whole perspective. And then I felt more feelings, of course, and I felt more energy and things was working for me better. And then since then, you know, doing everything and getting back to my business and, you know, life's going pretty good up to 16. And then we're not getting along and we had a divorce. So it gets worse and worse with 16 years. Wonderful life, Justine's doing well. And I'm doing well. Everybody's doing okay. And that's the main thing. But now I'm alone and I'm like, what are you going to do with this program then? You deflated in 10 because you never did it in 2000. When are you going to bring it up? When are you going to have the guts to do it there? Now I'm chanting from 12. I go to a Florida Nature Culture Center with the Buddhist practice. They asked me to give my experience in 2012 in front of 150 men. So I told them, I want to bring it to the public. I want to give it, oh, yeah, we love your experience. They come up, 30 guys come up to me. Yeah, it's a men's conference. 30 guys come up to me after telling me about all these suicide attempt people, they're failing the son doing what he did in front of the father. They start revealing all this stuff to me. So he says, I'm up to something, but I don't do anything with it. Now I'm just trying to work, keep my life condition up, keep my business going, stay alive. And all that. So now I'm really struggling in 14. Oh, I got to do something with this. Nothing's happening for 4 years. Chanted one night at 3 a.m. I woke up. I was in my apartment by myself, my pup. I'm going to do a video right now. So I did my first video in 2016. It's a little rusty, but
it's okay.
How you communicate on the screen with people, how you can flow and talk and all that. Did my first video about never give up. And I've been doing it for 9 years now.
That's excellent.
And we talk about mission in the Buddhist practice that we've taken on. We think about all the suffering. We've taken everybody, even if they're not Buddhist practitioners. We have taken on the appropriate karma, whether it's good or bad from the distant past, to prove the validity of Buddhism that you can bring yourself out of this condition. The 10 worlds we live in. The conditional state we find ourselves in, like you said, emotions change every minute. So all these things that are going on, and I realized it, and I said, I'm not going to begrudge my karma anymore, whether it was good or bad in the past, because you have all this anger with it, losing my brother when I was 53, you get all this anger, and then you have to fight the God thing. I moved away from the more spiritual energy, from the universal energy now. You know, what's going on? And then I'm saying to myself, no more begrudging. It's from today, from talking to Elaine, to tomorrow. We learned from the past, but no more carrying it for the rest of your life. Some people, I've seen some people real estate, they're suffering in a chair, and they gave up after a divorce. They gave up after a child died. Look at my man that passed away at 95 years old. He lost a brother and he lost one of his sons. And if he can keep going, it's just to show people that you can still choose life within the tragedy, that you're going to show people that you could turn that poison into medicine.
Absolutely.
And that's my story, Oliver, right to where I am today.
That is such a beautiful message. Dan, I so appreciate you coming and sharing with us. I'm really relieved and happy for you that Justine is good. I'm happier that you're good, because sure, you're quite a light in her life, I'm sure.
Yes.
It's a lot to unpack. And there is nothing worse than having to deal with the illness or loss of a child.
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing. And I understand why people go into depression and lose themselves after such a loss.
Can I read the shirt to you?
Yes, please. Let's read your shirt.
Let's get the shirt read, because I think that's going to be key. Okay, here it comes. Okay, the shirt says, suicide victims are not weak, selfish, or cowards. They are fathers, mothers, sons, daughters, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, cousins, grandchildren, and who were in pain and are missed and loved every day. Choose your words carefully, and please don't judge what you cannot possibly understand. Time to change, raise awareness, not stigma.
That's absolutely beautiful, Dan.
The great shirt, I saw it online, I said, I'm buying it.
It's an excellent shirt.
Says
well,
a lot.
Yeah, it really does.
I'm sorry I monopolized about my story, but I got going and wanted to let people know that no matter what I've been through, and not to begrudge my past at all, not just because I practice Buddhism, just as a human being, that we got to help other people that gives back to us. We can't get caught up in our own little self-centeredness that we start losing touch with the human race because we're online all the time. We have to be informed. We have to care about people, even the ones we disagree with. We got to care about them too.
Yeah.
They're still human beings. We might disagree to the help with something, but that doesn't mean we don't have a chance for them, for their happiness and their good health and their protection. And they matter too, as the worst person in the world that matters. And you're like, yeah, I can't forgive that person. Forgiveness is for yourself.
It absolutely
accountability, is. Accountability is for the other.
That's
you know?
Right.
And you see, you got to be able to forgive yourself and move on. So I just feel that choosing life is such, like Banner says, a determination. It's not just about inspiration and motivation. You got to make an inner determination, like my last short I put up. You find me on the Dan Pelley, whether you find me. You put in Dan Pelley, P-E-L-L-Y, I'm coming up on all the social media sites. I'm on 20 of them. I'm constantly in the mix with my shorts. Show my pop sometime that I do live a life. It's general, but you can find me that way. But to choose life is an inner determination. And when I made that first determination, even out before my second attempt, I got a quote about determination, that when you're determined, things will start moving in that direction.
Yeah.
And it's more of a quote, but in general, that if you decide that you don't, this will never work out, then it's never going to work out.
But that's right.
You have setbacks. So once I took that inner determination on, it was really a good, and I still read the quote every day. Everything starts moving in the direction of success. And it's not about money for me. Everything I do, because I self-fund a lot, it's all about in the heart.
Yeah.
That I want to be able to say one thing, that person that heard one thing in my story today, that I'm going to keep trying to choose life. That's all I ask people to do. We can't save everybody. You've lost close people. I've lost close people. You're not going to save everybody. But one of my mentors, the tool that's been a practice, I'll tell you, I said, look, we're not going to be able to save everybody there, but you got to keep doing it.
Absolutely. Because
you're going to save the next person. I've had some young people contact me that watch me. I really appreciate your content. I almost took my life months ago, and here I am still because of you. So I get these accolades that when I started, I was getting all the negative in 16. Okay. Oh, who cares? You should have been successful. People say mean things.
Yeah.
But you read from a lot of inspirational speakers that the first thing you got to do as an inspirational speaker then, or a motivator, whatever, is shut out the negative.
Absolutely.
And don't reply. I don't reply anymore because I'm a fighter. I would reply.
They're speaking from their pain.
Yeah, because I don't have any more time to reply, first of all. And yeah. I'm not going to acknowledge the negativity about how people are weak or cowards and all that. It's not the dialogue I want to have anymore.
It's definitely not worth it. I just want to say for our audience that everything about Dan and how to get a hold of him, et cetera, will be right down below. The transcripts in the show notes. I thank you so much for coming to join us, Dan.
Thank you for having me, and I hope I passed the good message.
Absolutely. And by sharing your story, you are, of course, offering hope. And if we can ignite hope in even one person, then I think our conversations are absolutely worth it.
My saying is always now, and I learned in my practice, never give up, choose life.
Always.
Thank you
so much for being here with us. I'm Elaine Unkey. This is Suicide Zen Forgiveness. And until next time, make the very best of your today, every day. We'll see you then.
Thank you for being here for another inspiring episode of Suicide Zen Forgiveness. We appreciate you tuning in. Please subscribe and download on your favorite service and check out SZF's YouTube channel or Facebook community. If you have the chance to leave a 5-star rating or review, it'd be greatly appreciated. Please refer this to a friend you know who may benefit from the hope and inspiration from our guests. Suicide Zen Forgiveness was brought to you by the following sponsors. Trul Social Media, the digital integration specialists. Let them get you rocking page one in the search results. Canada's keynote humorist, Judy Kroon, motivational speaker, comedian, author, and stand-up coach at Second City,